Good morning, everyone. Greet you in Jesus' name this morning. Privileged to be with you all again. Today's date, your calendars will tell you, is Mother's Day. And those of you who have heard me talk about my feelings over the years, you probably know that I struggle to preach Mother's Day messages. For one thing, I've never been a mother. And I have no idea what it exactly is like. But anyway, we're going to try that this morning, so I'm going to be looking mostly at you ladies. As I was preparing my notes, I kept thinking of things that I wished I could say to the dads to kind of balance the load out a little bit, but I guess we'll wait till Father's Day and let whoever takes Father's Day take that job upon themselves. Well, to all of you children, and every one of us here today is somebody's child, but there's a promise given to people in Exodus 20:12 to people that honor their fathers and their mothers. And I know that this is supposed to be a lifestyle, like we should honor mothers and fathers all the time, but it's a little bit like having special days. Just, for instance, we set aside a day in December to think about Christ's birth, even though we all know that that's probably not when he was born. It's just the time that we can do that. Thanksgiving is another example. We should live a life of gratitude, but it's special to have a day specifically set aside to think about being grateful. So it's a little bit that way with Mother's and Father's Day and so on. So that's what we're going to do today. So I have just some observations and some principles that I would like to talk about. The message is very practical, not real heavy on a lot of Bible verses, unfortunately, because it's one of those things that you don't really know where to go. But I have the message broken down into several different parts, and I was thinking about mothers in the sense of the stages of motherhood and how those things affect the way mothers relate to their children and to life in general. And I was thinking about, when does motherhood start? Is it when you have children? Well, yes and no. That's when your title becomes mother, but we were privileged to have two daughters, and it's interesting how little girls will act like mothers to their dolls. What is going on there? Well, that's something I'm not skilled or educated enough to understand what the psychology is behind that. But there's something instinctive in little women to want to take care of little things. It's really neat when you think about it. And so are they mothers at that point? Well, they're certainly acting out something, right? They really are. And our modern culture wants us to somehow believe that that is a socially constructed thing that we force on little girls. And I'm interested in that because if that's true, it's not true. But the reason we know it's not true is because there are countries that have tried their best, the Scandinavian countries in particular, Norway and Finland and Sweden and some of those really liberal countries, they have tried their absolute best to force girls to play with trucks and to force boys to play with dolls. They've tried this in their kindergartens and schools. And the fascinating thing of that whole experiment, it's been going on long enough that they can now see whether it works. Is gender roles something that we just cooked up because it seemed to make the most sense and it was a way to keep you women repressed, to keep you at home and taking care of children? Is that what was actually happening? Well, it seems that the answer is no, because as hard as they've tried, the labor sorts itself out. As women go to seek careers, they almost always go heavy on the nursing and caretaking in, I was going to call it industry, I don't know if that's the right word, but that sector of labor is majority women. And engineering and computer sciences and things like that are primarily men. Why? They've tried so hard to make sure that those things were equal outcomes, and it isn't happening. So I think that it's just proof that God instills in little girls and little boys something about life that they will develop. So, back to little girls playing with dolls. One of the things that we notice, all of us who observe little girls, we know that there is nothing that will thrill a little girl quite like being able to hold a real baby. And so if you're a new mother here and you have a new baby, I understand that it can be really annoying to have a flock of little girls wanting to see your baby and hold your baby. And there's a place to say no, but there's also a tremendous gift that you can give little girls by letting them at least have a peek and touch and hold the baby for just a little bit. So it's something to think about. Well, girls grow out of that stage of wanting to play with little babies, or little dolls and things like that, pretend to be mothers. And I'm going to just skip over a period of years of what I would consider developmental. And think about you young ladies here on the front bench. I'm going to single you out just a little bit, because I want you to understand something. Go with me to the old book of Genesis. There's a verse or two that I want to just pull out to get I want to extract a principle from these verses to help us understand something important. Genesis chapter 3 is the most depressing chapter of the Bible, perhaps, because, well, it's the story of the fall. And that's depressing to think about. And when God gets to talking to the man and the woman and the serpent, he's sorting this whole thing out, listening to the stories that they're telling. And then he brings judgment. And he judges the serpent. And then in verse 16, he turns to the woman. He says, "I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow shalt thou bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. And unto Adam, the man, he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, until thou return to the ground, for out of it thou wast taken, for dust thou art, and to dust thou shalt return." So what do I want to get from this? Well, let's talk about the man first, because I want to take that principle and apply it to you young ladies. The concept of work in the scriptures, there was some kind of work before the fall. I don't understand what it was, but they were supposed to do things in the garden. The man was supposed to take care of it in some way. But we know that it didn't involve thorns and thistles, and we know that it didn't really involve the sweat of his face in the way we think of it. What I'm saying is that the work under the curse became much more difficult to get the results that we want. But all of us men know that if we sat around all day long and refused to work because it was just too hard and took too much out of us, we would be depressed and probably turn to criminality just to keep things interesting. And you can see what happens to men who get paychecks without working for them. It destroys them. It takes all the purpose and fulfillment out of their lives, and they get bored and they do bad things. I would like to just take that over to you ladies. We live in an era when the push in the modern culture is that women should view childbearing as something that is you shouldn't do. Like, it's an option that if you want to take it, great, but if you really want to be a fulfilled woman, you're not going to take that. And I'm here to say that I think that's wrong. I think that the most fulfilling life that a lady can live is when she embraces the pain and heartache of bearing children and just deals with it in the most gracious way that she can. Just like a man who goes out and works really hard to make a living is a fulfilled man and one who is taking responsibility and owning the consequences of sin, it's kind of what you women do with childbearing. And so for you young ladies, the reason I'm singling you out is maybe you're sitting there and thinking, I don't want to do that. I want to pursue a career or something like that. Obviously, not every woman in the world is called to bear children. We understand that. And so the point that I want to make here is that accepting God's path for you is where fulfillment is. And there are men who are maybe handicapped in a way that they can't work hard physical labor, and so they have to we're not talking about those exceptions so much this morning. We're talking about the overall usual normal life that God gives the majority of people. And so following God's path usually ends up in a place where women are bearing children or should be. And I think that as young ladies, you should accept that and not deliberately choose not to. Does that make any sense? I hope that makes sense, because it needs to make sense. I will give one word of caution on this subject, and this isn't just for the young ladies anymore. This is for all of us to think about. If God's path for you is not having children, particularly if you're married and it seems like you should, I want to just caution us against forcing the issue. And I know I'm going to say a lot of things that probably raise tons of questions, and so if you have questions, you can just ask me later. I'll be glad to talk about them. But if you think about Abraham and Sarah, for instance, they were promised children, right? They were promised seed that could not be numbered. And when it didn't look like that was going to happen, they decided to do their own thing. And it was an absolute disaster. Now, how does that translate to modern day? Well, if we push the issue and we will be parents no matter what God's plan is for me, and we push the issue, we can get into some very ethically and morally questionable dilemmas, especially with the medical technology that we have these days. And I'm just going to stop there because it's a huge subject and I'm not going to go any farther into that. But there are things that I think as Christians we need to submit to, and if childlessness is one of them, we might be better off than just forcing it and saying, I will do things my way. And that goes for all of us. And it goes even for those of us who have children. If we get to the place where it's like, I'm just going to have two children, I'm just going to have three children, I will not have a big family, or I will not. Like, when we get into the driver's seat of these issues and we're like, it's going to be my way, well, that's not even Christianity. Christianity is about taking up a cross and following God's plan for us, right? And so, young ladies, still back to you, this is something to think about. The fulfillment for you, if God calls you to motherhood, is to embrace it and to work with it, just as it is for a man to step into the role of working hard and providing, even though it's a very difficult job to do. If you think about the women in the Bible who are mentioned in detail, I think of people like Sarah, Rachel, Hannah, Elizabeth, women like that, all of them are mentioned because of their story surrounding motherhood, if you think about it. Some of them had some disappointments. They didn't have children for a while, then they did have children. And usually it was some sort of miraculous thing, especially the four that I mentioned there. But they wanted children, and I think that it's something we should cultivate in our young ladies, and of course, mothers as well. So now, let's move to another stage. This was all before you become a mother as such, with children of your own. I'd like to just mention the stage of young motherhood. And I split each of these from now on. They're going to be split into two sections. I want to offer some encouragement and then maybe some exhortation, if that's okay. What's the difference between encouragement and exhortation? Well, encouragement and exhortation are probably a lot the same, but exhortation to me sometimes carries just a little note of warning that if you don't do this, then this might be the result kind of thing, whereas encouragement is just keep doing what you're doing. Being a mother of little children, preschool and younger, from my observation, is probably one of the most difficult stages of a woman's life. And you probably feel like your physical endurance and your mental capacities and your emotional tolerances are on the edge of just collapse pretty much all the time. At least that's what it looks like to me. And I don't blame you. I want to offer you some encouragement, though, if you're in those shoes this morning. 1 Peter chapter 3. Peter's talking to wives. And he's talking about their appearance and their behavior. But he adds this in verse 5. 1 Peter 3:5, "For after this manner in the old time the holy women also, who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands. Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement." Now that does not have anything in there about children, and I get that. But I wanted to just pick out that phrase about ye do well. I already told you that I believe that a woman who's called to motherhood, who embraces that as her calling in life, is going to be fulfilled in a way that if she resists it, she probably won't be fulfilled. And so I'm assuming that you have children and you are embracing that calling in your life, I'm going to say you are doing well. That's what you should do. You are living according to God's plan for your life, and you are allowed, because that's what you're doing, in verse 6, you're allowed to live fully trusting God. You do not have to have any fear of terror, and that's what afraid with any amazement would kind of translate to roughly. And so you can trust God fearlessly. You're doing something that seems impossible, raising children. I mean, what kind of job is that anyway? That's impossible, right? You're tired all the time. You feel like you're going to snap or whatever. But no, you're actually going to be fine, and you're doing well. So keep it up. The second thing I want to encourage you in is that remember that you're doing work no one else can do. And this is a very physical thing, of course. Whenever you're caring for a newborn, there are things that only a mother can do for her child. Moses' mother got him back from the river because Pharaoh's daughter could not provide what Moses needed at that moment. And it wasn't until later that Moses was old enough and ready to move away from his mother. And same with Samuel. Hannah promised that she would give Samuel back to the Lord, and she did that in a very, I would say, dramatic way, in letting him go back and live under those terrible people, Eli and his sons. Just, it's just mind-blowing to think about the environment he was in. But Hannah kept Samuel at home until he was old enough to be on his own as a little boy. He could feed himself and so on. And so your work as a young mother is very important. You're doing something that nobody else can do for that child. So just remember that. Another encouragement for you all, mothers, if you have toddlers, preschoolers, young babies, even if your husband can be at home a lot, even if he is maybe even working from home, there's still going to be a period of time where the mother's job or the mother does a lot of what I'm going to call the line upon line. The Bible talks about how you should teach your children line upon line, precept upon precept. And while the father is called to lead out in that, there is a time when we trust you ladies as mothers to do a bulk of that work, just because of the nature of young children. You're around them all the time, you take care of them. In Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8, and in Proverbs chapter 6, verse 20, there is a verse that reads almost the same. I'm going to read them to you. Proverbs 1, 8, "My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. For they shall be an ornament of grace unto thine head, and chains about thy neck." And so then Proverbs 6, 20, "My son, keep thy father's commandment, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart, and tie them about thy neck." So you have this law of the mother, which is an interesting little turn of phrase. Now, it could just be a poetic thing, but I think it's also meaningful that the poet decides to write instruction and commands of father and law of mother. And so what I'm getting at is that as mothers, you have a mission field right in your house. We do not believe that children are born condemned. We believe they're born innocent, but we also believe that they're not born saved. And so you set them up with your mission efforts in a way to receive the instruction of the father and also then the conscience of the toward God. Of course, fathers have a lot to do with that, but like I said, it's hard to... I'm just going to let that for another time, so you're off the hook for today. But Father's Day, I don't think I'm going to preach that message, but we'll let Ben or Klaus take care of y'all. And the reason I want to make sure that you understand that you have a mission field in your house is that I think sometimes, just from my observation and listening, that sometimes young mothers can feel as if they are not doing their duty because they're not free to make the meals. They're not free to go visit. They're not free to volunteer time sewing for CAM. Well, that's okay. We understand that. We get it. We know that it's incredibly demanding to have a bunch of little children. And it is not selfish for you to say, I can't do those things. I need to stay home and take care of my children. That is not a selfish thing. It's okay. And you have that calling. And so just relax. It's going to be fine. Now, some exhortation for young mothers. As I said, it's a little bit the same as encouragement, but maybe with a little bit of warning. I think I'm going to use this phrase for every stage of motherhood, especially from young mothers to grandmothers. But don't waste these years. They are exhausting, but your children will grow very, very, very quickly. And before you realize it, all you have is pictures and memories. That's all that's left. And you're setting the stage for whether those pictures and memories reflect things that you will look back with fondness or regret. Of course, we all understand that life is not all roses and cupcakes, and it's not going to be all glamorous and glorious. And there will be days that you look back and you fall into bed and you're like, I hope I never live that day over again. We get that too. But overall, is it a positive experience? Don't waste your time wishing you were younger or older or freer or that your children were somebody else's children or that they were better than they are. Don't waste your time doing that. Don't waste the years because they'll be gone. Second exhortation to young mothers, trust your husband. Now, we're talking in relation to Christian men who are seriously trying to be faithful. Okay, that's who we're talking about. If he's an evil person that you somehow ended up with, and he is abusive, none of what I'm going to say applies. But going with the assumption that he's a Christian, godly man who wants to be faithful, trust him with your children. Psychologists and scientists understand that the most well-adjusted children have both parents present and active in their lives. We know that women tend to be more tender and they tend to be more protective of their children. Men tend to push the boundaries with them. It's pretty rare that you see a mother tossing a baby into the air. You don't really see that very much, but we dads love it. It's great fun. Children even kind of like it. I said baby, didn't I? But you understand, little children. They. Why do we do that anyway? Well, it's actually part of the development of a child, and that's not part of the subject this morning, but mothers are gasping, and the dads and the babies are having a blast. So carrying that over into other little things, such as discipline and training, mothers tend to be softer hearted. I'm saying tend because not everything is 100% set in stone. And since that's the case, there's bound to be little conflicts, or maybe big conflicts, over discipline and training of the children. But if you do not allow your husband to be involved in this role when they are young, he will not be there whenever you wish he was going to be there. Just remember that. The law of the mother and the instruction of the father in Proverbs go together. Children need both. And one of the things that I did not read, the verses following Proverbs 1:8 and 6:20, both of those passages, you can go check it out for yourself, but both of them go straight from my son, listen to your father and listen to your mother, and then it goes right down into talking about moral and character integrity. That's what it's talking about. It goes right into that subject. And so all I'm saying to you young mothers is, if you push your husband out and say that he's too rough or he's too harsh or too strict or too whatever, whatever, if he's truly a godly man, you're going to have to let go and trust him because children need both. That's not to say that, well, again, I should talk to you fathers a little bit, but sometimes we need to listen to our wives too. But it's a team effort. It's not one or the other. But I am aware of situations where the women basically tell their husbands to keep their hands off, and then when the children are older, it doesn't work out so well. So that's third thing. Train your children. As young mothers, if you allow a 2 or 3 year old to intimidate or sass you, all I can say is God help you when he's 12 and 13. I mean, it sounds terrible, but it's just the way it is. And so I said earlier, don't waste these years wishing for your children to be older, and I still mean that. But as these children are young, remember they're not going to stay young, and that there's a long view, that this is a project that is going to, the results of what's happening when they're really little are going to have a crop attached to them as these children get older. Don't let your children be little monsters because someday somebody is going to straighten them out and they're going to do a lot dirtier job than what you will. It's just, I don't know how to say it any more nicely than that. You do not want your children to behave in such a way that they get fake smiles and fake looks from adults. You want your children to be the kind of people that adults genuinely enjoy having around. So do what you can to make that job, or to take that job seriously. And of course, again, it's a team effort, fathers and mothers, but I'm talking to mothers this morning. Mothers, teach your children, young mothers, teach your children from a young age to take the little responsibilities that they can take. So it can start with tiny little things like picking up toys after themselves, feeding the cats or dogs, or whatever it is that they can do. And it's probably better to let them start doing those things before they can do it perfectly. When you have a child standing at your elbow on a stool begging to help rinse dishes, probably you should let them. Because if you push them away and push them away, one day you're going to say, "Why are you sitting on the sofa and not helping me?" Well, it's because you told them to go away. But if they show an interest in it, okay, there's always, okay, you understand, you're not going to let them do this with the best china, but you can let them do it with Tupperware. Let them try. Even if you have to rewash the dishes, it's probably better to use that impetus of a child's interest to get them involved in taking responsibility rather than waiting until they're lazy and then trying to force them to be. And yes, this all makes your job take longer. Yes, it can be frustrating. Yes, there will probably be a slop to clean up after they wash the dishes. The water's going to be everywhere. But there's something going on there that needs to happen. And I'm not saying it has to be every time. I'm just saying that these are things that young mothers can do. It's intense, but take it serious because you're investing in a project that's years and years and years old. Like, it's going to take a long time. There's no switches to flip. And so you train and you teach. Well, I think I've given young mothers enough, haven't I? Let's talk about middle-aged mothers a little bit. And some of these stages can overlap. I realize that with big families, you can have mothers that fit pretty much every one of these categories, and so whatever that's worth. But moving into middle age, I want to say that this stage, as I observe, is the stage of, it could be defined as letting go, that you let your children go to school and then you let them get their driver's license and then you let them, you know, do all kinds of things. They get bigger, they get more independent of you as their mother. This is not to say they don't need their mother, but it means that the dynamic is very different. I heard someone say that a good mother must necessarily fail. And I've been pondering that. I don't know if I know what he meant by that, but I think it might mean something like this, that the whole aspect of motherhood is that you take care of your children. But at some point, you're going to have to stop. At some point, they're going to have to become independent and be their own person. Otherwise, and so, yes, you're going to fail at being everything for them. But that's what they need. So some encouragement for you. Just accept the letting go. Children were not meant to be children the rest of their lives. Nobody wants a 30-year-old living in their house depending on their mother the rest of their lives. Nobody wants that. We would see that as a failure. That's not what we want. And so if you're setting your children up for success in their spiritual and in even just physical life, we have to let them go. We have to let them grow up. We have to let them make some mistakes. We have to let them get hurt sometimes. We have to, yeah, we accept our children as God's gift, but we hold them loosely and we let God do with them what he wants to do with them. And so our job shifts then from a lot of training to helping them develop who God wants them to be. And so we take time to help them in their personal interests and their talents. And probably at this stage of your life, you're going to be a little freer than you were as a young mother. And so use that freer time to serve in the ways that maybe you thought you wanted to as a younger mother and just couldn't do it. So don't just turn inward and wish that you could have your babies back. Help your children navigate the friendships they're building. Help them in all the things that they need help in. And again, don't waste these years. Don't spend the time wishing that these children were younger or older or whatever it is that keeps you from being content with your lot in life. Some exhortation for middle-aged mothers. Team up with your husband to teach your sons to become men. This is a point that, I don't know, it hit me through listening to somebody. I don't even remember who exactly. I think I have some ideas. But anyway, I was listening to, I don't know if it was a sermon or a seminar or what it would qualify as. But he made this point, and I think it's very, very good. If men grow up thinking that all women are there to do is to serve them, they will never become leaders or protectors. And so mothers have to let sons go in a way that maybe they don't have to let their daughters go. And then the men need to be there to help their sons navigate through that. But I think I've lived long enough to witness what happens when a mother caters to her sons beyond what she should. You will end up with sons who are lazy and really end up hating their mother. They might not say it, but they sure can act like it. And that's not what you want. So they need to learn that you are not there to give them everything that they want, and that a truly developed man will be one who protects and serves his mother, and then of course his wife, and then the community as well. That's what fulfills their call in life. In relating to your daughters, if you have daughters old enough to help others, let them go. Remember how it was when you were a busy young mother. And if you have a daughter old enough to help, let them go and help. It's a training ground for daughters to learn to become mothers, to learn that they can work with other people graciously and be a help, to learn the blessing of service. Basically, I don't have a lot more to say about middle-aged mothers, but basically at this stage, you are, as a mother, and of course fathers, but we're talking to mothers, you're beginning to reap what you set in motion. And while course correction may be possible, it gets exponentially harder with every year that goes past because the groove gets worn deeper and deeper. So that's why it's so important, and that's why I spent so much time on talking to younger mothers, because that sets things in motion that are very, very difficult to undo later. And you don't, that's just hard. Well, the last stage that I was thinking about was grandmothers. And I don't have a lot to say here either. But there's a role for grandmothers. As your children are gone and they're off raising children of their own, a couple of things. Encouragement to you. Stay faithful, because we need faithful older people. That's what makes communities work. You may be losing the physical strength of your middle age and youth, but you can pray and you can offer encouragement and you can be a support in that way to younger mothers. I don't know if my next point is exhortation or encouragement. I wasn't sure where to put it, but it's an observation that troubles me. And I don't know that I see it here, but I have seen it around in plain communities. And it's the trend for older, maybe women in particular, but even men, to somehow want to stay relevant and cool. Nobody wants a cool grandma. It just doesn't work. But I think I've seen that. I think I've seen older people, women, try to somehow stay cool. And so they change their fads and fashions to keep up with the young ladies. Don't do that. You should know who you are by that point. You should be settled in your convictions and your identities. And yeah, just don't. And so stay faithful and be consistent. Be a testimony of God's goodness. And that's one way to have a very fulfilling older years, I believe. I haven't experienced them, of course. But by observation, I think that's the case. In conclusion, I'm just going to sum up by saying, you mothers, you have a high calling. You really do. And we need you. We need you to be faithful and not to give up. And all stages, don't give up. We need faithful women, mothers, to continue the process of bringing children into the world, training them to be agents of Jesus Christ in his kingdom, and just keep the generations going. We need every one of you. Let's move forward.